Okay. Good evening, all. Welcome to the Lane Transit District Board of Directors Finance Committee meeting. I'm going to call this meeting order. And we will start with roll call. Susan Cox?
Here.
And Michelle Weber? Here. So that item of business is taken care of. Comments from the chair. Really, this is our first finance committee meeting where we're folding in a contract committee meeting with a bit of a different look to kind of talking more about financial status, different, you know, updates as we come across different things in our budget. We'll also be looking as a committee to kind of determine what types of other things we would like to talk about here. Presentations. Jameson kind of commented to me things like, what does it cost to really do a zero emission bus system? You know, what is the short term? What's the long term? What does that look like for us? And just be thinking more bigger scope on some of the financial decisions that could come before us. So just kind of thinking about things that we're interested in that we would like more information on would be a good place to start with that stuff. The financial snapshot, we've received a copy of that, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Christina will present on that a little bit more and kind of be thinking about, you know, what would we like to see in that? What would be helpful for us as board members? That kind of thing. So just to kind of front load that a little bit. And with that, we can move into audience participation. I don't believe I have any. Nope. Okay. So neither in the room or online, we have no audience participation. So we will move on to items for board recommendation. And the first one is contract number 2022-52, talking about our medical transportation management. And John, it's all yours.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having me today. I'm John Allen with Accessible Services at Lane Transit District, here to talk about our ride source contract. So I have a bit of information to share with you today. I'm also happy to be your test contract for our new format. So feel free to try things out. I'm happy to be responsive. We've got a great team to support me today. If there's any questions that I can't answer myself, we may need to get back to you. This is one of our larger and more complex contracts, and I'm happy to go through any of the details that would be relevant for this committee. So this is a long-standing contract that LTD has held, and it's also normalized common and, in fact, even expected that this regularly comes up for public procurement and bid. So part of being a good steward of public dollars is ensuring that we can get the best value for our community. So a big part of RideSource service is that it has mandatory ADA requirements to be able to provide service for older adults and people with disabilities who may not otherwise be able to use our fixed route bus system. So that's a mandate, whether funded or not. So it's required that we perform the service, and we want to make sure that we're doing so in a responsible manner with public dollars. So to do that, we've got a very unique system in our community that others look to emulate because we're able to leverage all of our partnerships, working with other organizations, being able to use Medicaid programs to help support one unified call center. It's pretty great for members of our community because they just have one phone number they call and we take care of the rest. We find what's the best options for them, what's the cheapest options for them. Can we provide free transportation to members of the community to help them get where they need to go? So they just tell us who they are, where they need to travel to, and then we take care of all the rest. So the hard work happens at the call center and with our operators. So the scope of work of this contract is to accomplish that. And a core foundation of that work is the ADA service that we perform through the RideSource call center. And you've heard me speak at length in past presentations about many of the other kind of auxiliary services and many of the other partnerships that we do to be able to do more with less. And the focus of what I'll be speaking on today then will be on the ADA portion, the mandated administrative costs to be able to run the call center, as well as the cost of being able to provide ADA transportation in our community. So the call center itself, we're typically seeing at least well over 1,000, and we're starting to break in over 2,000 calls every single day in our RideSource call center. So it's a pretty large scale operation that requires a significant number of call takers to be able to respond to. Our goal is that we can answer the phone within 30 seconds, 85% of the time. So we don't want anybody to be sitting there on hold, not knowing who they're going to be able to speak to. And we just want someone to be able to talk to a person. And so that's a metric that we uphold with our contractor. To be able to accomplish that, they're going to need a significant number of call center representatives to be answering the phone, as well as administrative support, both for the personnel who all get contracted through this contract, through LTD, as well as to be able to help us with reporting requirements. That includes significant changes that we've seen as a result of what are called CCO 2.0, or changes in how Medicaid works. So that's been an expansion both within the state of Oregon, not just in the number of people who have access to Medicaid, but also the types of services that we offer and the amount of reporting and essentially the paperwork that goes along with providing those services. So along with ADA, another kind of core program within the RideSource call center is this Medicaid transportation. That's one of those partnerships that we leverage where essentially we're able to utilize the resources through the call center while still getting funds to be able to provide Medicaid eligible trips for members of the community. So on average, and to give you a sample month, we might do a little bit shy of $750,000 in external fleet trips, or what we call this Medicaid style transportation, which are typically performed through taxis, medical service providers, medical transportation companies, ambulances, stretcher vans, things like that. And so we typically try and get those reimbursed on a $1 to $1 rate through Medicaid. So our local coordinated care organizations here are Trillium, Pacific Source, and we also do work with Oregon Health Authority to be able to perform those trips. For the ADA portions of our trips, we're doing, and to use our kind of standardized month of November, we wound up doing 6,584, which is a pretty average number nowadays, though we've scheduled our scope of work to be able to handle what we'll call pre-pandemic service levels, seeing that the amount of calls and trips that we're responding to and performing have been steadily increasing. So I wouldn't say that we're quite at kind of what we'll call the new normal or post-pandemic, but we have seen that steadily start to change, particularly over the last few months. So we want to make sure this upcoming contract was prepared for that. That winds up being, at this rate, around 79,000 trips per year. And we actually set the scope of work for this to be around 150,000 trips per year, which would not be unusual for us at a pre-pandemic service level. So leading up to that, it'll probably be somewhere in between, but with the length of this contract being a 4-year standardized base term, we see that as being necessary to ensure that they're able to maintain what we'll call kind of minimum network adequacy to be able to perform this work. So to do that, there's two different rates that get proposed into the final contract. One is what we'll call fixed rates, or what we know that it's going to cost the same every single month over the course of the next year. And the other, what we'll call variable rates, which means that we'll pay a certain dollar value for every single trip that gets performed. So we have to keep the lights on. We have to keep people answering the phone, no matter if someone's calling us or not, or no matter how many people are calling us, but we're only sending out vehicles based on actual trip requests. And those are going to change based on the needs of the community. And as we've seen, particularly throughout the pandemic, that's been a pretty wild swing in both the number of trips and the cost per trip. So things like having PPE equipment, downtime for disinfecting and quarantining vehicles in between trips, you know, additional safety precautions that we've had in place, As well as rising labor costs. I'll note that the being able to recruit and retain employees has gotten significantly more expensive, essentially across the board, but especially in transportation. We've seen that both with our ride source services in our internal and external fleet and in our fixed route as well, that increasing costs due to labor have become more of an expectation throughout our community. So we've seen a proposal through medical transportation management that addresses both of these anticipated costs. And we had a lengthy process involving many members of our LTD team to be able to determine a proposal that we want to bring before you today. So the current contract that's in place is contract 2017-01, which meant that we initiated that scope back in 2017. And the original intention was that that would be on a base term set to expire, and in which case, as I mentioned, it's standardized for us to periodically have that go out to bid. In fact, we're actually required to have these contracts go out to bid to make sure that members of the public have an opportunity to be able to compete for these types of contracts when they come up. So we did a wide solicitation. And so beginning in August, we posted a scope of work and widely encouraged any interesting parties to be able to attend. We actually hosted a webinar where we answered any questions, described the type of work that we perform, and just made sure that anyone who had an interest knew that they would be supported in submitting an application to LTD and that it would be reviewed and compete fairly with any other applications or bids that we received. So from that, we put together a selection committee internally, which included members of our accessible and customer services teams, planning, finance, operations, IT, pretty broadly throughout the organization. That was important just because this was both a very large scale contract for us. We also just think it's important to have broad representation to be able to help make sure that this contract aligns with the mission, vision, values that LTD has for our community. And so that's reflected in the scoring of the proposals that we received. Leading up to the proposals themselves, we received what I would consider to be an extremely good response from prospective bidders with requests for information, follow-up questions. I think we wound up having well over 100 individual questions from prospective bidders, just on the types of services that are performed in our community, better explanations of some in-depth statistics that we provided through the scope of work, and just folks that were interested in knowing more about this as a prospective bidding opportunity. So we responded to all of those and wound up, once we received our final bids, reviewed them, and we scored each of the different proposals based on the bidders' qualifications and experience, their approach, how they would essentially perform this type of work, both at the call center and to be able to perform trips in our community. An important qualification for us was their commitment to both diversity and cultural competency skills. These are folks that need to regularly work with older adults, people with disabilities. They need to be able to serve our entire community. So we need to make sure that they're able to do that in a way that's always going to be professional and respectful and to set a very high standard that's expected within our community. So we also looked at price, their specific expertise in transit. So some prospective bidders had experience running a call center, but not so much with transportation, some more in transportation than a call center, some more with ADA than non-emergency medical transportation, vice versa. We need someone who can do it all. So we made sure to vet the bona fides of any interested parties. And we also check the references, where else they've been doing this work. So following those bids, those were scored by this broad committee within LTD, and it was determined that we wanted additional information and called them forth to both give us presentations, bidders who made it through that portion of the solicitation, to both provide presentations and an opportunity for Q&A from any members of LTD that served on our selection committee. Following the presentations and Q&A, we scored them once again based on similar criteria, the quality of their presentations and their sufficiency of their responses to our Q&A. Following that, our selection committee unanimously decided to put forward a recommendation to select Medical Transportation Management, Inc. as the successful bidder for review of this committee, with the intention that ultimately this would culminate in a recommendation for our to our board for our general manager to enter into contract negotiations to finalize. So at this point in time, our committee has essentially put this forward as our recommendation based on the extensive process that we've put forward so far, and based on the information that we've received going through lengthy proposals, presentations, Q&A, and using our own professional expertise, putting this forward for your consideration as our determination of to be able to operate as our contractor for the RideSource call center and to be able to operate service for the next upcoming contract period. So the base contract period we have set aligning with our contract grant cycles. So you have likely also heard from me at least once, if not many times, about how our STIF 5310 FTF STF and several other grants all fit together into our complex RideSource services. Those typically operate on a two-year cycle. So rather than have any of our contracts end in mid-contract period, we typically align the terms into periods of either 2 or 4 years so that the money kind of neatly fits within that cycle, which is set to begin on July 1st of this upcoming fiscal year. So with that, I wanted to make sure we had lots of time for questions, discussion, or anything else that I could do to help support this committee making informed choices about this contract. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, John. That was a great presentation. I appreciate all the detail that you put into that for us. Susan, do you have any questions?
No, I would like to thank you, John, for a very thorough, I'm feeling really confident after both the literature that we have here and then the information you provide. So, thank you for that.
Okay. I don't have any questions either. You really put a lot into that presentation and it was very helpful for easy decision-making, I think. So I would entertain a motion.
Okay. I would like to propose that we move forward with contract number 2022-52 to the Board of Directors with a recommendation for approval.
I will second that and I will call roll for that vote. Susan Cox?
Yes.
Michelle Weber also says yes. And we're going to move this on forward. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Next, Christina gets to take the floor for an update on our financial reporting or to talk through what this is going to look like coming in the future.
So, good evening. I'd like to start by introducing Pam Strutz, who's our controller. And she is the partner that with me in creating all the numbers that you see whenever we present to you any financials. And before we begin, I wanted to provide a little bit of context for this new monthly report that we are going to be producing. I want to talk about a little bit about the reports that you receive and how this fits into that. So you receive our annual comprehensive financial report, which will be presented to the board in the January board meeting. We also have the quarterly performance indicators report that you will receive quarterly at the board meeting, and also a quarterly financial overview report, which has key statistics and performance metrics that align with our strategic business plan. We also provide you the annual budget and the long-range financial plan, as well as the community investment plan, which you see twice a year. You see it preliminary in October, and then you see it a final along with the budget in the April timeframe. And then you also receive the preliminary financial results for the fiscal year, which happens in July. And then this is a new monthly report that we have provided for you. And it is one that provides, will be at the finance committee meetings only. And it provides year-to-date information, basically. So to give you a year-to-date status of the revenues and expenditures by each of our funds. And it also has commentary that goes along with each one of the funds to tell you about sort of the story behind what the numbers are, the numbers are there for you. It has very high level information at the fund level, but then I also provide this detail information on the revenues and expenditures, as well as how we're doing with regards to our reserves and our cash. So I'll walk you through each one of these pages as we go along. So it focuses primarily, like the high level focuses on the annual, so annual expenditures and annual revenues. And the reason for that is because we have a, you know, a long-term goal of being sustainable, which means that our annual operating revenues and our annual operating expenditures align with one another. So I would like to start walking you through this document. So the first page, or the first three pages, are the high level by fund. And so the what you see here is the four operating funds, and then you'll see one capital projects fund. And then on page four, there is the reserve funds. So if you look at the first fund, we'll start with the general fund. The report is through period five. So period five is through November. And when you look at period five, you know, theoretically, you would say that's 42% of the fiscal year. So when you're looking at it, the reason that you have information here that shows your year to date, your actual budget in the first column, which is total the full year budget, then the second column is your year to date. So that's basically saying 42% of the fiscal year, that's what your budget would be. Then the third column is telling you, here's what your actuals are, the actuals that we have through period five year to date. So you can compare your budget year to date with your actuals year to date. And then the next column is percentage of budget. And the percentage of budget is telling you how are we doing? So you would want to look and say, well, expenditures should probably not exceed 42% of the current budget, or you may think that there is some kind of a risk that we might go over budget, right? Because if we're at 42% of the fiscal year, theoretically expenditures, unless there's some exceptional reason for timing, would be around 42%. And what I can tell you is that for all of the funds that you see here, none of them, as you can see, if you look at all of the percentages, the expenditures, none of them are exceeding 42% at the current time. But if you look at the commentary that's provided in the general fund, I talk a little bit about the VEBA payment, which is a payment that happens only in January, and it's around 1.4 million. So if we were to add that in, it could put us closer to a little over budget. So, but we're going to look at that more intensely. And if there is any risk that we would go over budget, we come back to the board and do a supplemental budget and we make a request, because the law requires that we stay within the appropriated budget that the board has given us. So this is just an indicator to give us a sense and to have you be able to understand what's going on within each of the funds. The other fund that I mentioned in here that has a potential for going over budget is the point-to-point fund. And the reason for that is that we have the City of Eugene Bike Share Program. And that program is something that we didn't budget for, but it is budget neutral for us in the sense that we're getting a grant, and then the match for the grant is through the City of Eugene. So what you'll see when we come to you for a supplemental budget was we'll say, here's the increase of expenditures that we're asking for that's above the budget that we originally requested. And here's the funding sources that we're getting to pay for that additional expenditure. So those are the only two, though, that I have identified in the commentary that have any potential risk of going at all over budget. And they would be covered by a supplemental budget brought to you at the budget committee meeting. The capital projects fund, which is on page three, this one is highly dependent on project timing. And project timing, we never go over the, or we do not, we keep to the budget that is approved for the total project, which when you look at the CIP, that tells you what the total project costs are and what the funding sources are for those projects. But there can be timing differences that occur year to year related to the capital projects fund. So what we look at is two things. One is not going over the total budget that's in the CIP, but also making sure that we try to stay in budget within the fiscal year for the projects, but we don't worry about that as much because our projects are primarily grant funded. And so the timing is less critical in terms of the annual, but it's more critical in terms of the total budget. So as you can see, for P5, we are we're behind in terms of our projects, but you've probably heard of some of those reasons. For example, the bus that caught on fire, right? So we don't have control over those types of things, but it will impact the timing, or supply chain issues or things like that will cause projects to be behind schedule. And that's why you'll see that they are below budget. But again, we're always paying attention to the total budget for each one of those projects. Moving on to page 4. That's the reserve page. And this shows you both the reserves and the cash on hand. And you could see that all of the reserves are in alignment with what the board approved, and that there is some additional working capital anticipated based on the cash that we have on hand. That the purpose of that working capital, though, will be to help pay for some of the things where you see where we have an annual expenditure that is exceeding your annual budget exceeding your annual revenues for that year. So when you see on the previous funds and there's some negative, right, you'll see the expenditures are higher than the revenues for that annual revenue. We're relying on some of that working capital to pay for those gaps, basically. And so you'll see looking at this reserve page helps you to understand where we are with regards to that. And then moving on to page 5, this is the detail analysis of the revenues. And so we analyze every single line item of the revenues and their status. And we talk a little bit about, you know, some of the timing differences that might occur. So for example, if we take payroll taxes, which is a significant portion of our revenue, we get spikes that happen in August and November and February and May. So because of those spikes, you can't just take the P5 or P6, right, and just say, okay, annualize that. Does that tell us the answer? What you do instead is you look at the seasonality of it and make sure that the payroll taxes we estimate will make it for the whole full fiscal year. And with regards to payroll taxes, we also meet with the Department of Revenue, and we make sure that they are in alignment with the assumptions that we're making with regards to payroll taxes. So some of our bigger items, we do different kinds of due diligence to make sure that those numbers are healthy. And then slide 6 or page 6 of the document is expenditures. And it's an analysis of the expenditures to date and how they're doing, and just any details that we want to share with you with regards to expenditures. Like, for example, we talk about how the Medicaid fund is at 59% of pre-COVID levels and things like that to give you some context as to how the expenditures are doing year to date. So with that, I will take questions if you have any about this document or any of the documents related to the financials.
Susan, do you have any questions?
Well, I'd just like to say how much I really appreciate and agree with sort of the broader scope of this committee. It's like we've been like the Lone Rangers out here. So it's nice to have it more expansive, and especially the opportunity for us to actually have some interaction about events that affect the organization. So thank you for that. And also, I hope it's okay to mention that I think we're really gonna miss you. I'm sorry to hear that you were not be here for the next few meetings, I suppose, but it seems like you've left us in good hands. So I don't really have questions specifically about the presentation, because okay. I think the documentation, everything is good. But I do have a question that I'd like to ask. It's, I think, is relative to the budget. And that is, everywhere, it's so hard to find enough people to hire and staff. And I know that's been an issue for LTD, and that you are competing with a lot of other organizations. So as we look at the budget for next year, do we have adequate compensation packages put in, particularly for administrative staff going forward? Is that reflected in the budget, not only to hire, but to retain? I think we really have to make an investment in that. So I'm sure you've thought of that, but that's
my question. We are in the budget process right now. I can talk a little bit about, you know, we have a very comprehensive package that people receive full benefits of, you know, full medical and all those things paid for. We've also done a compensation study that's done roughly annually. And that last one was done in December of 2021. And that compensation study showed that we are at 96% of market. But we also, you know, have in the budget process, we go through and we look at what the, make certain assumptions for wage increases. They've also done a new modeling, which I believe allows to go over to, I think it's 115% of market for pay for employees on the admin side.
So when you say that, we're what, at 96%, so what is that? Is that national? Is it regional? Is it state?
So it was a study that my understanding was done by Cascade Partners. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was a regional study, but Perry, are you able to talk to this more than me?
Yes. It was Cascade Employees Association, and the 96% is actually a reflection of the population here at LTD, how it actually works. 96% of the average of the mid-range, which would be 100%. So the goal is to have everyone closer to the mid-range. But it is something that we're still working on, and it is an expensive venture to be competitive and to offer those competitive salaries.
So isn't it true that if you hire someone, but then you don't retain them, what it takes in terms of investment to replace that position, that's a lot, right?
Yes. So on average, if you, at least traditionally, what we found is that the annual salary times 1.5% is how much it would take to replace a person. That's just getting them in the door.
Sure. So what's the retention rate, if I can?
Good question. I don't have that number on the top of my head, but I can definitely get it
to you. You're the one that is going to have to sort of manage getting new people in the door. So, okay. So do you feel like there's adequate budget included for 2023? Oh.
I will. But I'm going to say that it is an expensive venture.
Right.
The adequate budget, I don't know if I can speak to that in total, but we are going to need to address it at some point so that we can continue to be competitive in this market.
Since COVID, there's been so much, every meeting, I think we've talked about the challenges of staffing. So I guess I'm responding to that and just hoping that that's all going to be in there. So anything we can do as a board to help support that.
Personnel service costs is it's a large percentage of the total operating cost. So it's about 67 to 70% of total costs. So it's the highest operational piece of If you're excluding things like reserves or things like capital investments, right. it's a very significant portion. And so if you want to figure out, you know, how much of an impact that would have on the financials, if you look at the budget that's posted on our website, there's a personnel line so that multiplied times whatever percentage you're thinking is the financial impact that it would have on our budget, basically.
Well, I just encourage that whatever LTD has to be at the top of that competitive edge that, you know, we do that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't really have any questions. I just want to thank you and all of your team for all of the work that you do to put this information in front of us. I know it's detailed and it takes time, and making sure it's all accurate and right is a really big deal. So thank you very much. And we are going to miss you.
Well, I'll miss you guys as well. Thank you so much.
Okay. Items for action or information at a future meeting. I kind of touched on that at the beginning of this, just be thinking about what we'd like to talk about in this setting. You know, any ideas will be welcome. And with that, we are adjourned.
And we're done.
That's fairly painless, right?